Karen Lyle of SalesPort Talk. Let's listen into a conversation I was having with Matthew Byers, a flag maker, about tall ships, races, cruises, and flags.
Well, you know, Matthew, also this tradition of flying flags, from my research, and I'm sure you have some things to add to that with your extensive knowledge, it started, you know, back in the days of the tall ships, you know, more than 300 years ago, when captains or companies flew flags or countries flew flags during wars just so they wouldn't shoot on their own people. What are some of the things you know about, you know, like before the United States was established?
Going way back hundreds and hundreds of years, the flag that is flown were flags that were flown on ships. It's all about communication, where one ship could be identified by another from a distance out to sea. Is it a friend or is it a foe? Then they have the signal flags, which are still used today for communicating various messages from one ship to another. Not really necessary these days with radio communication, but the Navy still use them. But flags go back a long way. I can tell you that the oldest flag, at least national flag, that is still flown today is the Danish flag, which has been the national flag of Denmark since 1260.
Also, Matthew, the rules are rather formal when it comes to bridges for races or cruising, where the yachts that are representing the different clubs fly their flags, because there's some competition there. Tell us about how they're used in races.
In racing, The rules changed recently, a couple of years ago. Originally, for race signals, there were either three flags or cones colored red, white, and blue. The white flag goes up, or the white shape goes up. That's 15 minutes before start. The red shape goes up. That's 10 minutes, or pardon me, 10 minutes for the white shape. 5 minutes, the red shape goes up. And then for go time, the blue shape goes up. Now it's different where you can use various signal flags to represent different fleets that are racing, or there are what is called class flags, which is a square flag with the logo of whatever class is going to be racing in that particular series.
Thank you, Matthew. This is Karen Lyle of SalesPort Talk.
All right, thank you so much for that, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you coast to coast, around the world on American Forces Radio Network and on our twitch.tv high def 1080p webcam. You can see Karen Lyle from SalesPortTalk.com is in studio, as she always is at 9:40 on Tuesdays. How are you, Karen?
I'm doing great, Rick. It's sure great to be here today.
Very nice to have you, as is our guest, and that is Captain Johan Steinke, and he is here to talk about his experience sailing tall ships and also his book, his children's book, The Greatest Captain in the World 2, which I have in my hands and I'm holding up to the cameras right now. And first of all, Captain, nice to have you on the show. When did you get the first inkling that you could write successful children's books?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on your show, folks. I've always been into stories. Even as a little kid, I loved writing, I had a shipmate named Joel Rude on the tall ship I was on, and he was, at the time, this young 18-year-old ADD kid who just was literally bouncing off the walls. He was an acrobat, but he could tell the most incredible stories I've ever come across, and he'd always introduce the crew and introduce the captain and come up with some wild tale, and when I discovered he was making them up, like improvising them, I was like, oh man, some of these stories would make a great kid's book. And so I sat him down one evening. We went through a bunch of, you know, like scenarios, like, oh, did the captain ever come across pirates or this or that? And then many, many, many years later, I put together as a kid's book and found an amazing illustrator and hired him. And that was that.
Well, Johan, it's so good to talk to you on the show. It was great seeing you and your first mate that you met on the Lady Washington when I met you back in the day, who is now your wife, and you have two little boys. How do your little boys like the stories?
Oh, they love it. I got a 1.5-year-old and a 3-year-old, and they'll sit down every time I pull out the, because there's two books. There's The Greatest Captain and The Greatest Captain of the World 2, T-O-O. And they love both books. They love the drawings. They love the poetry. I notice little kids, especially like 1-year-olds, 2-year-olds, even if they don't understand what's going on, they like the rhyme of it and the rhythm. So, or meter, I guess would be the poet's word.
I like the fact that you had a female captain the second time and a male captain the first time, and then there was a race and they both agreed to tie to save face. You know, that's a cute ending. I really like that.
Yeah, well, I wanted a cameo, and I was wondering if you were going to mention that, because you have so many racers and stuff on your program. So yeah, it's a pretty epic race they go through on the second boat. Or second book.
Yeah, well, I'm just looking. Take us through the second book, because as it starts off, on a ship far away from any quiet, calm bay was a family headed for a new home, and they were huddled close together and worried for the weather as the planks began to shake and groan. Take us through. What's this plot here?
Oh, well, basically, so the concept for the second book is you have obviously an immigrant family, and they're headed somewhere. So they're headed across an ocean, and then basically the sailors come down and they start telling crazy stories about their captain.
Well, in many ways, I remember the Paul Bunyan stories, you know, the tall tales that were told about the wilderness with Paul Bunyan. And this series that you've done, The Greatest Captain in the World, is kind of like that, but for the ocean. And, you know, Johan, you are a real tall ship captain, and you've been a captain of many tall ships, both on the east and west coast. We met and sailed on the Lady Washington, and then we went down the coast together on the My Way, which was a 75-foot catamaran. What was it like for you going from being a tall ship captain, which is certainly one lifestyle, to being a yacht captain, which is another lifestyle?
Oh my gosh, two different worlds. It's amazing. It's amazing that you could be in the same environment and share so many of the same things and yet just have an entirely different feel. I mean, first of all, the luxury, obviously, you know, this catamaran was all souped up and absolute luxury. I mean, I had a proper living room, you know, whereas I'm used to being like, oh, I got a door. That's amazing. I got a bunk that's big enough for me. That's incredible. So, yeah, it's the tall ship world. So yeah, just totally different world. Yeah, I don't know. There's almost no comparison. I can see why people absolutely love it, and I love the old wooden boats. You know, like the creak and the, you know, in the book you mentioned the creak and groan of the planks. Like, you don't get that on fiberglass so much. You know, you don't get that on metal boats. It's just not the same. So there's something about that. Just the romance of it, I guess, I like. But yeah, we had a great trip on that My Way catamaran. It's a pretty smooth sailer, I'm not going to lie. I was impressed.
You know, when you think about these tall ships, by the way, we're speaking with Captain Johan Stanky. When you think about these tall ships and all the different sails and what they can do, is it the kind of thing where, as much as you want to learn in theory, you don't really know what each sail is going to do and what the wind condition is? How much experience do you need before you actually know what you're doing out there as a captain?
Well, it really depends. It depends on conditions. It depends on the crew, obviously. Like, we've definitely, I remember we brought captains on board who knew nothing. But if you've got a solid chief mate, if you have a solid crew, then they can get you through quite a lot. So you could have a competent captain who's like, yeah, okay, I know the shipping. I know everything going on outside the boat. You know, the chief mate can handle what's going on inside. That said, obviously, you know, a good captain knows when to take in sail and when the boat can handle it, when it can't. There's a lot of factors. You get used to it after a while. Some of it becomes intuitive, of course, but it's complex. I mean, I've dealt with, you know, I've managed crews of 20 people with, you know, 11, 13 sails. It can get pretty complex pretty fast if you start setting a lot of sail and having conditions change. So, but I mean, that's why you train. That's why you practice.
So, Johan, you've been a captain for, I think, more than 10 years, if I recall, and it's probably more than that since we last talked because we've known each other for a while. Tell us some of the places that you have sailed to with your crew on a tall ship.
Oh, man. Well, I've been up and down the west coast of the United States several times. I've been up and down the east coast a couple times. I sailed across the North Sea from Dublin, Ireland to Roskilde, Denmark on the Sea Stallion, which was the world's largest Viking ship replica. That was back in 2008. So, yeah, I was in the Bahamas. But mostly on the, I'd say most of my experience was on the east and west coast of the United States. Just going in and out of ports. We got some I always tell people the west coast is absolutely gorgeous, very remote and rugged. It's really neat.
My grandfather was from Roskilde, and that, of course, the birthplace of kings in Denmark, and a great Viking museum there, and in Aarhus as well. So were you on a great rowing ship? Was somebody beating a drum?
Effectively, yes. We had a crew of 65 on a 100-foot open boat that was 12 feet wide.
Wow.
Now, it took us 6 weeks to get to Roskilde from Denmark. The actual sailing time was only, it was slightly less than, I think, 12 days. So the very, very fast boat, but you had to wait for the wind and weather because we didn't have an engine. So, you know, you could row some of the time, but not out in heavy swells. So, yeah, it was pretty epic. I'm not going to lie. It was great.
You know, Johan, didn't you and Megan go for your honeymoon on a Viking ship? I mean, that wasn't really the luxury honeymoon that I would imagine. Tell us a little bit about that.
No, we sailed on the Ottar. She was a transport vessel, and as far as Viking ships go, it was luxury. Oh, wow. We had, like, this tent, and it was, you know, really benign conditions. So I think Megan was actually, and I should correct, when you say chief mate, you're speaking figuratively. My chief mate, I think, when we met was Catherine Pogue, which who you guys interviewed. But yeah, Megan is my chief mate in other ways, but... Yeah, it's we had a great trip. Definitely, you know, it was a good test of our relationship right out of the starting gate. So I'm glad we had it. But yeah, I think she was hoping for an even more epic adventure, though it was pretty good as far as honeymoons go.
You know, something I wanted to ask you about your book, The Greatest Captain in the World, too, being self-published. I see something for the lawyers. It says the moral rights of the author and the illustrator have been asserted. What does that cover?
Oh man, you got me. I'm self-published. The main reason I self-published was because I knew. I mean, first of all, you could just sit on your, you know, you could write something and you just sit there forever, and it'll never get published. Like no publisher would touch it. I also thought, just, you know, the book isn't dumbed down. Like I remember being a little kid and reading stuff and not understanding every word, but still getting it and enjoying it. So I put in real sailor vocabulary. You know, it'll be challenging, but good. I mean, it's something I wrote to be entertaining for parents as well as kids. But yeah, as far as self-publishing, I just knew, yeah, I don't want to sit around my whole life waiting for a publisher to come find me. And I also wanted, when I discovered that publisher, so if you go through a publisher as an author, all they want are your words. You almost never get a chance to choose the illustrator, the types of illustrations. You get no input there. And I thought, you know what? I'm an expert in these historical tall ships. I love history. I feel like I should be able to put in a little bit of input and make it something special. And I do believe if people read it or look at the illustrations especially, like we started at the source. You know, I sent Andy, who was the illustrator, I sent him historical prints and paintings of the age, like from the Age of Sail. Whereas if you look at most, you know, historical or not historical, but like piratey boats, they're basically taking caricatures of caricatures. They're copying stuff from other kids' books. They're copying like anchor tattoos, and that's your anchor. It's like, no, I remember one of the drawings, the captain has to grab an anchor. And when I got the sketch for that illustration, I had drug anchor the night before, like 2 a.m. I was just like, no, this anchor needs holding power. So I sent pictures of anchors. I put my sailors up next to fishermen anchors, you know, big anchors, so you could see the size and get the idea behind what an anchor actually does.
Well, and I saw some of the sketches that you did before you gave them to the illustrator when we did the first book. And a shout out to the people who were patrons from the St. Francis Yacht Club and the Daughters of the American Revolution that I introduced you to, who helped you get the funding for that very first book. You know, these things don't happen without a lot of support.
Yeah, no, they were, I mean, it was incredible. A lot of people came through. Those groups in particular, thank you, Karen, for that. I really couldn't have done it without them. Yeah, no, otherwise I would have had to take a significant risk and probably could not have at that point in time. So I'm very, very thankful for everybody that supported the book and its creation.
You know, there's a picture of you in this book in the back, and you got the three-cornered hat, and it looks like maybe you're on the Bonhomme Richard.
The what?
The Bonhomme Richard.
No, I was on Lady Washington, I'm sure, when that picture was taken.
All right. Well, everybody, make sure to check out the book. It's called The Greatest Captain in the World 2, and you can go to greatestcaptain.com, which is a pretty cool website. We've been speaking with the author and the captain, Johan Steinke. Thanks, Johan.
All right. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me interview with you folks.
A pleasure, and blessings to Megan and your kids. Really appreciate you coming.
All right.
Thank you, Karen.
All right. Good stuff. And you remember the Bonhomme Richard, right?
Oh, of course.
Yes. Or as we used to say, the Bonhomme Richard by, of course, John Paul Jones.
It depends upon where you come from in the world as to how you say that.
John Paul Jones, also the name of the bassist of Led Zeppelin. Thought about that because I know you're a musical person
too.
That's true. SalesportTalk.com, pianofinders.com. Karen Lyle, thanks for coming in.
It's such a good thing to see you every week.
I agree. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back, y'all.